Welcome and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. On this week's episode, NAHU's John Green and Chris Hartman recap the ongoing developments here in Washington as lawmakers are in the middle of their two-week Easter recess. We'll look at what to make of the legal challenges to the ACA, including the status of Texas v. United States and the ruling to overturn the Association Health Plan rule, our comments on the administration's drug rebate proposal, as well as a check-in on surprise billing, single-payer, and Medicare legislation. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and to rate us. The podcast is posted every Friday on these platforms ahead of being distributed through NAHU's member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. The big whoop for the Washington Update podcast this week is the ongoing legal challenges to the ACA and the Trump administration's regulatory workarounds of the law, notably with the association health plans. With the continued uncertainty surrounding the law and the new rules, what should consumers and their brokers be thinking about as these cases move through the courts?
Well, first thing to keep in mind, I think, is that we've only really begun this legal fight. And if this is a district court judge, there's lots left to be done here before any decision is finally made. There's circuit courts, could go all the way up to the Supreme Court. So there's lots to be done in the process. So it doesn't really change anything for your clients today. If you're in states that have taken advantage of this, like particularly Nevada, nothing has changed. And obviously, if you were involved in an association health plan that existed prior to this rule under the other system, the other path forward, nothing's clearly changed there because the lawsuit has nothing to do with it. So in the short term, I think it's really important to realize that there's nothing changing. Over the long term, obviously, there are things to keep an eye on here. Will association health plans created under this new option, this new system, go away if the court decision rules against them? Sure, I suppose that's a possibility, but there's a lot of levels of court and litigation to go on before we get there.
So the biggest question relative to the rule and the weakest link has to do with sole proprietorship or ownership. And because of the weakness or perceived weakness of that particular aspect of the rule, there are carriers who are accepting applications for the group, but minus the owner. And that's about the only, quote, change or issue that I've heard out there. And this has been verified in Nevada through our working group call just recently. I learned that was, in fact, happening. But I would also look at the administration and what are they doing to protect the rule. I expect them to seek a stay. If they fail to get a stay, then I would expect that the administration would do what they call a non-enforcement action, which cannot be challenged in the courts. But it simply allows, as Chris said, for the rule to remain in place while it does make its way through the court and that they are in charge.
We're in the middle of Congress's two-week Easter recess, which means that while lawmakers are not here in Washington, they're back in district. What can NAHU members do during this time to help advance our federal priorities?
So while they're back in district is actually the better time to try to meet with your member of Congress. While we love to have everybody come to Capitol Conference or other fly-ins here in D.C., the actual better time to meet with your member of Congress is while they're back home. They have more time, schedule's more flexible, they're not possibly distracted by votes, hearings, markups, other sorts of things that can get them off schedule. So I always encourage people to set up some time to meet with their member of Congress or senator over the Easter recess. I know our members in Alabama are meeting with Senator Jones on Monday, so our members have been taking good advantage of this recess break to talk about the health insurance system, overall cost of health care, prescription drugs, and important issues like that to our membership. I also think the other important thing to do is town halls. A lot of members are doing public town halls over this Easter recess. This is a perfect time to come in and particularly talk about really big subjects like Medicare for All and how Medicare for All is not something that you want to see because it deprives you of any choices in the healthcare system. So I think while they're in recess and quote unquote on vacation, there's actually a lot of activity going on and a lot of good opportunity to influence your member of Congress.
I think a good icebreaker is actually to find out what's on their minds. You might be surprised by what they say. You can offer feedback on what your client's concerns are, whether you're a group market broker or a Medicare agent.
Last week, NIHU submitted comments in response to the Trump administration's proposed drug rebating rule. We specifically asked the administration to delay implementation of the rule. Can you clarify what led us to that conclusion and the other concerns that we enumerated?
I think that premium increases is probably the number one issue, aside from the effective date. That Medicare MAPD plans rebates, those funds are used to provide supplemental benefits such as dental, vision, and hearing, which is not covered by traditional Medicare. Also, nutritional and in-home options are also provided as supplemental benefits. On the employer side, the Employer Group Waiver Plan, or EGWP, is, again, those rebates are used to offset premium and keep premiums down. So that would be another concern. But the effective date could really destabilize the market. We think that they should move that date back.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, even people who are very supportive of this rule, have had concerns about the effective date just because of the timing of the market, being able to implement these changes if they're actually going to go through. But we have a lot of concerns here at NHU, specifically around employers who self-insure and how much of that self-insurance plan is also designed around what they expect to get for rebates. And the changes that will have to happen to mid and large size employers who self-insure if these rebates go away. So we do think that they will have an effect, as John says, on premiums and others. I think there'll be benefits to some who will see lower drug prices, but it is going to have a disruption on the rest of the market. And we wanted to express some of those concerns about the disruption on the rest of the market to make sure that you're looking at the overall picture on health insurance and health insurance premiums in both the Medicare Part D, but also in the employer market and the overall effect that's going to have on healthcare costs across the board. But while we're hopeful that people also see some things like insulin and others come down in price, Congress has been doing numerous hearings on the cost of insulin that we've seen go up by 300%. And so it's very understandable why people want to get those things under control.
The healthcare topic that continues to make waves this year is that of surprise billing. What are some of the major developments on this in recent weeks?
So surprise billing recently had a hearing in the Education and Labor Committee. It's the first public hearing on surprise billing. While surprise billing has been talked about lots in the media, and John and I have been involved in lots of meetings on Capitol Hill about surprise billing, this was the first one that was in a public hearing in the Education and Labor Committee, specifically the Health Subcommittee. And there were several good witnesses, many of which NIHU is very familiar and worked with. And they really talked about how surprise billing has been coming about, the hugely negative consequences on the consumer, and how consumers really, even if they do their best, can't avoid a surprise bill. People who end up in the emergency room by no choice of their own may end up with an anesthesiologist who is not in their network. People who even plan out a surgery and they think they've looked at everything, checking, make sure their surgeons in their network, the hospitals in their network, they think they're good. They also get stuck with these surprise bills because suddenly there's somebody who walked up to them and started working on them, was not a network, and then those require surprise bills. Sometimes it can be as crazy as a particular machine that was not a network that also was something that wasn't reviewed ahead of time. So these sorts of changes and problems clearly are terrible for the consumer, but we also need to take quite a bit of a look at how the consumer is protected and it doesn't increase overall health insurance costs.
So NIHU submitted two very effective letters that described stories that you provided to us that we gave the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee in the Senate and the Education and Labor Committee in the House, very similar letters. And I think that was very effective. I think that when they see that their constituents are actually, you know, facing these issues and that it's this widespread and that there's a pattern to these surprise billings, I think that this will be definitely one of those issues they tackle in a real way this year. It's been suggested that maybe some of this could be done through regulation. I am a bit concerned about what I'm hearing around some of the solutions. If it's a legislative solution around arbitration, I don't think that arbitration's the strongest solution, because if a provider is already charging 1,000% over usual and customary of private payment and they get a judgment for, you know, 300%, they still win. That's really not a solution, and it just will clog up the system and allow providers to remain outside the network. And that's really what is at stake here. that if it's an in-network hospital, you should be able to safely assume that services that are provided within by ancillary providers and so forth, the radiologists, are all in-network and accept in-network rate. There are other scenarios, of course, and whether it's voluntary or involuntary, but all these issues can be worked out, I think.
Yeah, John, you bring up a good point about how to actually resolve the surprise billing issue. Obviously, we want to make sure that consumers are not on the hook for any of these costs, but there are negative consequences to the system if people go down other routes. You know, it was originally proposed that what should happen is the insurance carrier, the self-insurer, should just cover the individual. And while we want to be able to hold the individual harmless, the idea that a doctor could submit whatever bill they want and that the insurance carrier or the hospital should just pay for it is going to just lead to increased cost of healthcare. So it's going to lead towards the ending of networks altogether, because if I'm a doctor in network and I'm watching other doctors outside of network get their entire bill paid, well, why should I be in that network? So I think those are a lot of negative consequences that could really go on if you just allow any sort of payment to be made. Some people talk about what about just giving back the average of those payments that the insurance carriers or the self-insured would be on for the average of those payments. I think the difficulty with that is it still allows the hospitals, the doctors, the surgeons, and others to submit very high bills and submit high bills on purpose to raise up that average so that what they get back is even higher and more amount of money. And again, raising the cost of healthcare. You know, we look so often at how are you going to really bend the cost of healthcare in America, which is one of the reasons some people want to go to Medicare for All. Well, this not only does not bend the cost of healthcare, this will rapidly bend it in the other direction, raising it quickly. So we really have to look at things that are going to not hurt the consumer, but also bring down the cost of healthcare. There's been some proposals to look at, particularly for people in the emergency room, that they can either get the in-network rate back for those doctors or 125% of Medicare. I think those are interesting solutions. John and I have been hearing a lot about arbitration right now as a possible direction, and there is some momentum there. Although I do have concerns for that mid-sized company who self-insures. Are they going to have to go out and get an attorney every time one of these surprise bills come in to go to arbitration? And what will that do over the long run? And will this also be a situation that slowly drives up cost of healthcare?
And as I mentioned before, the other issue that's going to move through Congress this session is drug pricing. And interestingly, it's all about list price, right? Well, this is the same situation we have in surprise billing, where doctors are setting the price, the list price, at whatever they see fit. And so how do we corral that in a way that allows them to make a living, but doesn't increase prices for rate pay? Everyone complains about premium, right? It's about how much it costs to get coverage. Allowing list price to stay in place is what we're talking about if you have arbitration. And that's why it's not a solution.
The other major healthcare topic is single payer. Between the introduction of Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill and the ongoing efforts at the federal and state level for variations of this, what is the latest on this issue?
Yeah, so Bernie Sanders has reintroduced his Medicare for All bill. It's even bigger than before. Long-term care insurance is now included also in Medicare for All. If you'll remember correctly, it's not really just Medicare for All. It's really kind of in a whole new system, because there'll be no copays, no deductibles, no paying into the system whatsoever. You just get all your healthcare services for free, regardless of what they are. And now that includes long-term care as being all the services for free. So I'd be a little curious what some of the think tanks might try to look at scoring this bill. You know, we've been interested in talking to some of them. It's a huge project, which is, I know, why some of them are a little apprehensive of taking it on, trying to figure out what the cost of this would be. It's unlikely we're actually going to see a score from the federal government. CBO and others don't just score these things anytime they're introduced. They generally have to actually be moving. And this bill definitely isn't moving. So I think we're going to continue to be hearing from Bernie Sanders that all sorts of healthcare, regardless of what it is, should be free, and that the cost of it, regardless of what that is, should be on the backs of the taxpayers.
But some of those cost estimates from think tanks, and I'm not talking about right wing, I'm talking about more center left, are saying that Bernie's bill only accounts for about 40% of the cost. and we're already at $32 trillion.
Yeah, Urban Institute and others have come up with very large scores for the bill he had last Congress, which is why I would love to see Urban Institute, which John is right, is a center-left think tank, who has not given an opinion on single-payer Medicare for All. They're just trying to give the numbers of what it would cost. And it is a considerably expensive system. And none of these bills introduced, being it a single-payer Medicare for All, Medicare buy-in, Medicaid buy-in, public option, none of them have really put the pay-fors into place of how we would actually pay for that. So I think these are going to continue to be a hot topic. And we're continuing to see it as a hot topic on state level. States like Washington and others are looking at public options right now. And that's going to be continue to be a big topic as states, I think, are even more likely to do something related to this than the federal government.
It's now time for the senior moment, NIHU's review of key happenings in Medicare and long-term care policy. John, as the lead of these issue areas, what is your senior moment for the week?
Well, I want to thank Chris because he met with the new staffer for Kurt Schrader, and they are now talking to Vern Buchanan's office, who we are trying to recruit to be the Republican co-lead on this. And I think that we're very close to a deal on COBRA legislation. And I think that once this bill is in place, it will make it that much easier to get things moving in the Senate, where I think we do actually have very good momentum. In the Senate, we have targets who are very, very interested, and it will really help close that loop with this House bill.
It's now time for the NIHU Healthcare Happy Hour's Toast of the Week. What are we toasting to this week?
This week, we'd like to toast to all of our members who are meeting with their members of Congress during the Easter recess.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for this week's installment of the NIHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NIHU's government affairs efforts, or to join as a member of NIHU, visit nihu.org.